Sahana Vavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Page 45. What, something changed here. We have more.
This is the beginning of the night.
Ah, okay. Page 45. One must simply be satisfied with seeing the glorious activities of the Lord's Supreme Lord's creation. The Lord therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 10:42, Vishtabhyaham idam kritstam ekam shena stito jagat. With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. The material world consists of innumerable universes, each one full of innumerable planets, which are all considered to be products of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's material energy. Yet this is only one-fourth of God's creation. The other three-fourths of creation constitute the spiritual world. Among the innumerable planets in only one universe, the so-called scientists cannot understand even the moon and Mars. But they try to defy the creation of the Supreme Lord and his uncommon energy. Such men have been described as crazy. Nunam pramatha kurute vikarama. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:5-4. Such crazy men unnecessarily waste time, energy, and money in attempting to defy the glorious activities of Arukrama, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's their whole point, is they're trying to defy. Because they want to establish themselves as supreme. Because of their intelligence, with their intelligence, then they can figure out everything. That's the whole idea. And they're very proud of that ability. But what they haven't caught was, well, where does everything that they're working with come from? Right? I mean, you can only be a scientist if you're studying science. But where does the science come from? That they can't say. You know, they'll say they have their method, therefore, then this way, then they can claim ownership of science. But actually, you know, even that, it's only that their method works for what they want to get done. Otherwise, if it didn't work, then that would be kind of stupid to have a method that didn't work. So the point is, this, even its ability to work is not theirs. Yes?
But also like the point that where does their brain come from?
Yes, true. Yes, where does the brain come from? Yeah, because they don't make the brain. So. You know, I mean, they kept Einstein's brain, right? But they didn't keep Einstein's mother. Wasn't she the one who produced the brain? Yeah, but they didn't. That. So, you know, maybe it was something that she ate or something. A particular kind of dill pickles. Or, no.
Sauerkraut.
Yeah, that's good to eat. And they were German, right? Sukadev Goswami concluded. One hears about the uncommon activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his various incarnations. He is certainly elevated to the higher planetary system, or even brought back home, back to Godhead. Whenever the activities of Vamanadeva are described in the course of a ritualistic ceremony, Whether the ceremony be performed to please the demigods, to please one's forefathers in Pritiloka, or to celebrate a social event like a marriage, that ceremony should be understood to be extremely auspicious. Right, so, in all the Vedic sacrifices, you have to do there's always a verse describing Vamana Day. That's just the Vedic rule. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 31. There are three kinds of ceremonies, specifically ceremonies to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the demigods, those performed for social celebrations like marriages and birthdays, and those meant to please the forefathers like the Shraddha ceremony. In all these ceremonies, large amounts of money are spent for various activities. But here it is suggested that if along with this there is recitation of the wonderful activities of Vamana Day, certainly the ceremony will be carried out successfully and will be freed from all discrepancies. Right? So best is that this description and discussion of the whole pastime connected with Bhagavatam. But if nothing else, then at least the verse is called Vamadevya. It's about Lord Vamana Day. Because the first verse of the Purusha Shukta in Samaveda is about Vamana Day. Like that. So that verse is then chanted.
How is it his birthday celebrated?
Sorry?
That would be interesting to know. The birthday. He was saying about there are three types of
marriage and birthday. Mm-hmm. It means like somebody has, you're doing the samskaras and things like that. So marriages, the birth ceremony and things like that. Yeah. Yeah. You want to know if they have sweet 16 means 16 oil lamps all there. That'd be really tough, especially if you want to show your wealth, so you have very big lamps, you know, so then, you know, they would be, you know, about 4 meters across for all of them. So how do you blow that? Get in line and then start blowing and go down the line. Or, you know, how do you do that?
And do you chant the Vamana Day verse before or after Happy Birthday?
Yes, that's it. I would tend to after. Yeah. Conclusion. One who takes shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord is favored by the Lord, regardless of whether such a person is a demon or a demigod, pratigya. Because the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:29, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion as a friend is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Hetu. The king or government is equal to all citizens. Therefore, if a citizen capable of receiving special favors from the government is offered such favors, this does not mean that the government is partial. One who knows how to receive favors from the authority can receive them, but one who does not neglects these favors and does not receive them. Udaharana. There are two classes of men, the demons and the demigods. The demigods are fully aware of the Supreme Lord's position, and therefore they are obedient to him. But even if demons know about the supremacy of the Lord, they purposely defy his authority. Therefore, the Lord makes distinctions according to the mentality of the living being, but otherwise he is equal to everyone. Upanaya. Hence, like a desire tree, the Lord fulfills the desires of one who takes shelter of him. But one who does not take such shelter is distinct from the surrendered soul. Right, so it's a matter of the Lord is there. He's willing for everybody to get the benefit. We take advantage, we take shelter, we get the benefit. We don't take shelter, we don't get the benefit. So in this way, it's equal opportunity, but you have to be able to take it. It's not like the modern where the equal opportunity is forced. Right? Equal opportunity means anybody from any kind of background, if they can come up to the standard, then there's no bar, right? But this whole idea is, no, we have to take every people from all these different positions that are unfortunate and then put them in the position, even though they're not qualified, then how is that equal? Then you're biased, you know? In other words, it means you're qualified, you can't get the position because it has to be, you know, this person from this, you know, unfortunate social group. That's biased, as Jiva Goswami points out. No, it's whoever qualifies. So if we say, okay, this person comes along from a group that you don't expect, but he's qualified, then allowing him to have that position, that's non-biased. Right? Then, of course, if you don't give it to him, that's bias. But it's also just as biased to not give it to anybody else, only to someone from that group, even if they're not qualified. You understand? So it's what is seen as a bias is then counteracted with a different bias, right? You know, fighting fire with fire, right? You know. So that's the whole point, is that then they both go out. So that's why after time, nobody cares for any of this. Does that make sense? Yes.
As you mentioned before, it comes from this idea that we are the best friends.
Yes, we are the best friends, so I'm doing the good thing. By me putting there, I feel good. I did something. I saw an injustice, I did something. But the whole point is if we do those things not according to the laws given by the Lord, we actually haven't done anything. In fact, we've probably made things worse. But hey, we feel good. And our friends pat us on the back for us, so what else do you need? You know, that's all. It's about the personal, right? You're even your friends. And okay. Ask a question. Define the term. Give me shelter. Okay. Chapter 24. Matsya, the Lord's fish incarnation, Pratigya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the Supreme Spiritual Master. Right, so we saw from last chapter how, you know, he brought out the glories of Bali Maharaj, and he also taught Sukracharya, because within this universe of those who are qualified, then Sukracharya is on the top. So then the Lord to be able to teach him, then that means that makes him the supreme spiritual master. Right? So natural then that goes on here. Because the Supreme Lord knows everything about the suffering of the conditioned soul, Lord Krishna directly instructed Arjuna. But people do not know who is a spiritual master, and that finding a spiritual master from whom to get enlightenment in regard to the destination of life is very difficult. So-called gurus instruct their disciples for the sake of material profit, because of the instructions of a foolish guru, one remains perpetually in material existence and suffers its tribulations. King Satyavrata shows us the way to accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the real spiritual master. The Supreme Lord has given full directions to Bhagavad Gita about how to deal with everything in this material world and how to return home back to Godhead. It is difficult, however, to understand Bhagavad Gita without the help of a guru. Therefore, the guru appears in the parampara system. One is sincere, he can find the guru and learn everything. It is therefore said, acharyam mam vijaniyat. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:17:27. An acharya who acts on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be understood to be as good as the Supreme Lord himself. That's the Siddhanta. Chapter 24 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikshit asked Sukadeva Goswami question 24.1 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 24.1. 8:24-2-3. What was the purpose for which the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted the abominable form of a fish, exactly as an ordinary living entity being accepts different forms under the laws of karma? The form of a fish is certainly condemned and full of terrible pain. Oh my Lord, what was the purpose of this incarnation? Kindly explain this to us, for hearing about the pastimes of the Lord is auspicious for everyone. Srila Sukadeva Goswami gives a reply to question 24.1 throughout the rest of chapter 24. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the Supreme Personality of Godhead's incarnation as a fish. It also describes the saving of Maharaj Satyavrata from an inundation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands himself by Svamsa, his personal expansions, and Vibhinamsa, his expansions as the living entities. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.8, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears on this planet for the protection of the sadhus, or devotees, and for the destruction of the miscreants, or non-devotees. He especially descends to give protection to the cows, the brahmanas, the demigods, the devotees, and the Vedic system of religion. Thus he appears in various forms, sometimes as a fish, sometimes a boar, sometimes Nrsingadev, sometimes Vamadev, and so on, but in any form or incarnation. Although he comes within the atmosphere of the material modes of nature, he is unaffected. This is the sign of his supreme controlling power. Although he comes within the material atmosphere, Maya cannot touch him. Therefore, no material qualities can be attributed to him in any degree. Because when he comes, he's coming with his associates. Right? So in this case, then, Maya is also one of his associates. So then she's managing and taking care of things. Just like when the big person comes, then you have so many other people that are helping and arranging things. Like that. So Maya is just one of those personalities. And then she's taking care of all these things for the Lord. So then he's unaffected by this because he's above. He's in control of her. Right? Once at the end of the previous kalpa, a demon named Hayagriva wanted to take the Vedic knowledge away from Lord Brahma at the time of annihilation. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead took the incarnation of a fish at the beginning of the period of Swayambhuva Manu and saved the Vedas. During the reign of Chakshusha Manu, there was a king named Satyavrata, who was a great pious ruler. To save him, the Lord appeared as the fish incarnation for a second time. King Satyavrata later became the son of the sun god and was known as Shraddhadeva. He was established as Manu by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To receive the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, King Satyavrata engaged in the austerity of subsisting only by drinking water. Once, while performing the austerity on the bank of the Kritamala River and offering oblations of water with the palm of his hand, he found a small fish. The fish appeared to the king for protection, asking the king to keep him in a safe place. Although the king did not know that the small fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, as a king he gave shelter to the fish and kept him in a water jug. The fish, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, wanted to show his potency to King Satyavrata. And thus he immediately expanded his body in such a way that he could no longer be kept in the jug of water. The king then put the fish in a big well, but the well was also too small. Then the king put the fish in a lake, but the lake was also unsuitable. Finally, the king put the fish in the ocean, but even the ocean could not accommodate him. Thus the king understood that the fish was no one else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he requested the Lord to describe his incarnation as a fish. The Personality of Godhead, being pleased with the king, informed him that within a week there would be an inundation throughout the universe, and that the fish incarnation would protect the king, along with the rishis, herbs, seeds, and other living entities, in a boat which would be attached to the fish's horn. After saying this, the Lord disappeared. King Satyavrata offered respectful obeisances to the Supreme Lord and continued to meditate upon him. In due course of time, annihilation took place, and the king saw a boat coming near. After getting aboard with learned Brahmins and saintly persons, he offered prayers to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, and thus he taught Maharaj Satyavrata and the saintly persons about Vedic knowledge from the core of the heart. King Satyavrata took his next birth as Vaivasvata Manu, who is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Vivasvanmanyave Praha. The sun god spoke the science of Bhagavad Gita to his son, Manu. Because of being the son of Vivasvan, this Manu is known as Vaivasvata Manu. Mm-hmm.
What's the connection between the previous chapter and this one?
Because the Lord is the Supreme Guru. We saw his guru-ness in the last chapter, now we're seeing more guru-ness in this chapter. But it doesn't mean it's not a whole different story and won't start a whole different group of questions and all that. So,
Maharaj, this is also the seventh Manu? was discussed in the last one. This is also seventh one in the different kalpa.
Yes.
getting the background of different mothers also.
Yes. Because it's all that, you know, one of the main topics is manus. So. Just continuing the manus.
Yeah, we saw the first chapter, you know, which speaks about the future manus.
Right.
So we gave all 14 manus. So
okay. So now they're going through.
In
okay. Shloka Anusharanam. Verses 1 to 6. Pariket Maharaj inquires about Matsya Avatar. 7 to 9. The first appearance of Matsyadeva to benefit Lord Brahma. 10 to 45, the second appearance of Matsyadeva to benefit Satyavrata. 46 to 53, prayers by King Satyavrata. Verses 54 to 61, Matsyadeva instructs Satyavrata about Bhakti Yoga. Maharaj Pariket said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is eternally situated in his transcendental position. Yet he descends to this material world and manifests himself in various incarnations. His first incarnation was that of a great fish, a most powerful Sukadeva Goswami. I wish to hear from you the pastimes of that fish incarnation. Right, so that could be another aspect, because he's described how he descends to different incarnations. So then the first incarnation was a fish, so that hasn't been described up to now. So then. O most powerful Sukadeva Goswami, I wish to hear from you the pastimes of that fish incarnation. What was the purpose for which the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted the abominable form of a fish, exactly as an ordinary living entity, an ordinary living being, accepts different forms under the laws of karma? The form of a fish is certainly condemned, and fearful, and full of terrible pain. O my Lord, what was the purpose of this incarnation? Kindly explain this to us. For hearing about the pastimes of the Lord is auspicious for everyone. 1 to 3, Srila Prabhupada comments. Pariket Maharaj's question to Sukadeva Goswami was based on this principle stated by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 4:7. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. The Lord appears in each incarnation to save the world from irreligious principles, and especially to protect his devotees. Paritra Naya Sadhu Nam, Bhagavad Gita 4:8. Vamanadeva, for example, appeared to save the devotee Balimarj. Similarly, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted the abominable form of a fish, he must have done so to favor some devotee. Pariket Maharaj was eager to know about the devotee for whom the Supreme Lord accepted this form. Sutta Goswami said, when Pariket Maharaj thus inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, that most powerful saintly person began describing the pastimes of the Lord's incarnation as a fish. You see, it's just also just how expert or just the mastery of Vyasadeva's literary ability, that without any break, then you have Pariket Maharaj speaking, and then it goes into Sukadeva Sutta, and then it'll go back into Sukadeva. So just, and now again, sometimes it even goes all the way back to Vyasa himself. But it's just how smoothly it comes out and how nicely the transitions are. Like that. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, for the sake of protecting the cows, brahmanas, demigods, devotees, the Vedic literature, religious principles, and principles to fulfill the purpose of life, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnations. Srila Prabhupada comments. The Supreme Personality of Godhead generally appears in various types of incarnations to give protection to the cows and brahmanas. The Lord is described as go brahmanihitaya cha. In other words, he is always eager to benefit the cows and brahmanas. When Lord Krishna appeared, he purposely became a cowherd boy and personally showed how to give protection to the cows and calves. Similarly, he showed respect to Sudama Vipra, a real brahmana, from the Lord's personal activities. Human society should learn how to give protection, specifically to the brahmins and cows. Then the protection of religious principles, fulfillment of the aim of life, and protection of Vedic knowledge can be achieved. Right, so then religious principles, fulfillment of the Avalite protection, all these can happen if we take care of the Brahmins and cows. Right? Because the Brahmins are there, they know how to the proper knowledge and how to perform the proper activities. Then, by the cows taking care of, they have the milk, then you can do all the offerings, right? Because in the Vedic system, then you're offering ghee. In the Pancharatric system, you're offering also the dairy products. So then whatever the system is there, and in the Bhagavat, you see, then it's based around also the cow, the same thing. So it's the offering to the Lord. So in worship the Lord, in worshiping the Lord, he likes dairy products. So we can understand from this, that seems to be his favorite of all the things, his dairy products. Therefore, the Brahmins know how to offer these dairy products to the Lord. Right? So when that's there, then you can then talk about religious principles, fulfillment of the aim of life, and protection of the Vedic knowledge. Those then can be achieved. Because it's through worship of the Lord that one can accomplish this. Without protection of cows, Brahminical culture cannot be maintained. And without Brahminical culture, the aim of life cannot be fulfilled. The Lord, therefore, is described as Go-Brahmana-Hitaya-Cha, because his incarnation is only for the protection of the cows and Brahmanas. Unfortunately, because in Kali Yuga there is no protection of the cows and Brahminical culture, everything is in a precarious position. Right? So sometimes we worry about the cows, but who worries about the Brahminical culture? Sometimes we worry about some rules or some laws or like this, but actually the full culture itself. Right? That's the... If human society wants to be exalted, the leaders of society must follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and give protection to the cows, the Brahmanas, and Brahminical culture. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, like the air passing through different types of atmosphere, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing sometimes as a human being and sometimes as a lower animal, is always transcendental. Because he is above the material modes of nature, he is unaffected by higher and lower forms. Because it's the modes that make a particular living entity higher or lower. Right? On the demigods, the mode of goodness will be prominent, so then they act in a higher way. On the animals, the mode of ignorance. But because the Lord's transcendental, whatever form he has, he'll still act in the same way. He's unaffected by the form. But it just makes it, you know, how you say, gives it some interesting flavors to, you know. Verses 7 and 9. The first appearance of Machidev to benefit Lord Brahma. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, O King Parikit, at the end of the past millennium, at the end of Brahma's day, because Lord Brahma sleeps during the night, annihilation took place, and the three worlds were covered by the water of the ocean. At the end of Brahma's day, when Brahma felt sleepy and desired to lie down, the Vedas were emanating from his mouth, and the great demon named Hayagriva stole the Vedic knowledge. Understanding the acts of the great demon Hayagriva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who is full of all opulences, assumed the form of a fish and saved the Vedas by killing the demon. Footnote 15. Srila Prabhupada writes to verse 9, because everything was inundated by water, to save the Vedas, it was necessary for the Lord to assume the form of a fish. You know, otherwise, if he did something else, that would be difficult. Oh, that was it. Verses 10 to 45. The second appearance of Machidev to benefit Satyavrata. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, during the Chakshusha Manu, there was a great king named Satyavrata, who was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Satyavrata performed austerities by subsisting only on water. In this, the present millennium, King Satyavrata later became the son of Vivasvan, the king of the sun planet, and was known as Shraddhadeva. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was given the post of Manu. One day, while King Satyavrata was performing austerities by offering water on the bank of the river Kritamala, a small fish appeared in the water in his palms. Right, because then you take the water and then you'll pour for tarpana. So when he took the water, then there was a fish. Right. King Satyavrata, the king of Dravidadesh, threw the fish into the water of the river along with the water in his palm. O king, Pariket, descended to Bharata. With an appealing voice, the poor small fish said to King Satyavrata, who was very merciful, "My dear king, protector of the poor, why are you throwing me in the water of the river, where there are other aquatics who can kill me? I am very much afraid of them." Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 14. In the Machi Purana it is said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead possesses unlimited potency. Nonetheless, in his pastime in the form of a fish, he begged protection from King Satyavrata." Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, To please himself, King Satyavrata, not knowing that the fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decided with great pleasure to give the fish protection. Footnote 16. Srila Prabhupada writes to verse 15, "Here is an example of giving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even without knowledge. Such service is called Agyata Sukriti. King Satyavrata wanted to show his own mercy, not knowing that the fish was Lord Vishnu. By such unknowing devotional service, one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Service rendered to the Supreme Lord, knowingly or unknowingly, never goes in vain." Right? So that's the whole point of Agyata Sukriti, is that you give an opportunity for people to take part in devotional service. Right? So those who will know it's devotional service will enthusiastically take it up. Those who don't know, they'll be attracted. That's why the festival, then it has both. It is attractive, so everybody's attracted. The devotees know it's about the Lord, so then they're taking part enthusiastically, getting that full benefit. And those who don't just see the attractive feature of it and therefore take part and get that Agyata Sukriti.
How important is Agyata Sukriti?
How important? Agyata Sukriti, when it comes to full, when it gets to a certain volume, then it becomes Shraddha, or faith. Mm-hmm. So the Agyata Sukriti is important to get to that point.
That's so why we go out and harinam.
That's what, yes. Because you go out and then after a while, that person who walks by every day for the last 4 years then stops and asks, "Well, what are you guys doing here?" Right? That's because they've been hearing for 4 years. It's created enough Sukriti that now they inquire. Right? Does that make sense? That's what it's for.
So one should underestimate it.
No, one should not underestimate Agyata Sukriti. That's the whole point, is that the Sankirtan mission means how to expose as many living entities to this as Agyata Sukriti as possible. Right? And then those who are favorable, then here's an opportunity that they may not have been taking, but it's there, so they'll take part. Right. Does that make sense? The merciful king, being moved by the pitiable words of the fish, placed the fish in a water jug and brought him to his own residence. But in one night, that fish grew so much that he could not move his body comfortably in the pot of water. And the water of the pot. He then spoke to the king as follows, "My dear king, I do not like living in this water pot with such great difficulty. Therefore, please find some better reservoir of water where I can live comfortably." Then, taking the fish out of the water pot, the king threw him in a large well. But within a moment, the fish developed to the length of 3 cubits. So that, yeah, 3 cubits, then that would be 4.5 feet, which would be 4.5, that's 6, that's about 1.15 meters. Yeah. The fish then said, "My dear king, this reservoir of water is not fit for my happy residence. Please give me a more extensive pool of water, for I have taken shelter of you." Amaris Pricket, the king, took the fish from the well and threw him in a lake. But the fish then assumed a gigantic form, exceeding the extent of the water. The fish then said, "O king, I am a large aquatic, and this water is not at all suitable for me. Now kindly find some way to save me. It would be better to put me in the water of a lake that will never reduce." When thus requested, King Satyavrata took the fish to the largest reservoir of water. But when that also proved insufficient, the king at last threw the gigantic fish into the ocean. Being thrown in the ocean, the fish said to Satyavrata, "O hero, in this water there are very powerful and dangerous sharks that will eat me. Therefore, you should not throw me in this place." After hearing these sweet words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a fish, the king, being bewildered, asked him, "Who are you, sir? You simply bewilder us." "My lord, in one day you have expanded yourself for hundreds of miles, covering the water of the river and the ocean. Before this, I had never seen or heard of such an aquatic animal. My lord, you are certainly the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, Sri Hari. It is to show your mercy to the living entities that you have now assumed the form of an aquatic. O my lord, master of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, O best of enjoyers, Lord Vishnu, you are the leader and destination of surrendered devotees like us. Therefore, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. All your pastimes and incarnations certainly appear for the welfare of all living entities. Therefore, my lord, I wish to know the purpose for which you have assumed this form of a fish. O my lord, possessing eyes like the petals of a lotus, the worship of the demigods, who are in the bodily conception of life, is fruitless in all respects. But because you are the supreme friend and dearmost supersoul of everyone, worship of your lotus feet is never useless. You have therefore manifested your form as a fish." Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 30. "The demigods like Indra, Chandra, and Surya are ordinary living entities who are differentiated parts and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord expands himself through the living entities. Nityo Nityanam. Oh, Chaitanas Chaitananam. Kata Upanishad 2.2.13. His personal Vishnu Tattva forms, which are all spiritual, are called Swamsa, and the living entities who are differentiated parts are called Vibhinamsa. Some of the Vibhinamsa forms are spiritual, and some are a combination of matter and spirit. The conditioned souls in the material world are different from their external bodies made of external energy, material energy." Right? So in the spiritual world, that means the bodies are made of spiritual energy. So then there, they're fully spiritual. But here, they're a mix.
Soul is very tiny. Mm-hmm. In the spiritual world, the body is bigger, but it's just made of the different elements.
From what I understand, the soul naturally expands to that form.
And now we have just the covering. It's not the expansion.
Basically, no. That's the thing. In the material world, you're 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. We don't expand to that. We expand our consciousness to that. The subtle body takes on that. The gross body has that, and our consciousness pervades that. But in the spiritual world, then, no one has a spiritual form. Okay. You know, whether it's directly the jiva or not, or whether it's the internal potency, that's another thing. But thus, the demigods living in the upper planetary system and the living entities living in the lower planetary systems are of the same nature. Nonetheless, those living as human beings on this planet are sometimes attracted to worship the demigods in higher planetary systems. Such worship is temporary. In other words, if one is to worship someone else, he must worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then his worship will never be fruitless. Even a slight attempt to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a permanent asset. Right? Like we see Balimars. Even with just wanting to offer obeisances, though he couldn't, it gave a permanent result. Therefore, as recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam, one should take to the worship of the lotus feet of Hari, even if this means giving up the so-called occupational duty assigned because of the particular body one has accepted. Because worship in terms of the body is temporary, it does not bear any permanent fruit. But worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives immense benefits. So, in other words, better than performing your duty and not connecting to the Lord, then maybe that one's duty can't be performed, but one can worship the Lord. So of the two, worship the Lord is the most preferred, as we see like Bali Maharaj. Because by worshiping the Lord, technically in one sense, he was giving up his duty. Even though he performed it as an offering of his duty, it would mean that after that he wouldn't have anything to be king of. Right? You know, kings are supposed to have something. Right? At least, you know, that three steps of land. But he didn't even have that, you know. You know, you can take tax from the ants that are crawling around on it. You know? So. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued. When King Satyavrata spoke in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who at the end of the yuga had assumed the form of a fish to benefit his devotee and enjoy his pastimes in the water of inundation, responded as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O King, who can subdue your enemies, on the seventh day from today, the three worlds, Bhur, Bhuva, and Swa, will all merge into the water of inundation. Because right? You'll only get all three of them if it's the end of Brahma's day. Right? Otherwise, if it's not the end of the day, it's the Manvantar or the end of the Yuga cycle, then there may be floods or not. It's not specific that it has. But the end of is after Brahma's day, then that's definite. When all the three worlds submerge in the water, a large boat sent by me will appear before you. Thereafter, O King, you shall collect all types of herbs and seeds and load them on that great boat. Then, accompanied by the seven rishis and surrounded by all kinds of living entities, you shall get aboard that boat. And without moroseness, you shall easily travel with your companions on the ocean of inundation. The only illumination being the effulgence of the great rishis. Then, because it's nighttime, so it's inundation, so then, therefore it'll be darkness. Then, as the boat is tossed about by the powerful winds, attach the vessel to my horn by means of the great serpent Vasuki, for I shall be present by your side, pulling the boat with you and all the rishis in it. O King, I shall travel in the water of devastation until the night of Lord Brahma's slumber is over. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments to verse 37. Here it mentions the night of Brahma. Though it was Chakshusha Manvantara within the day of Brahma, by the Lord's will an untimely devastation occurred. Since the flood covered the three worlds and appeared like the nightly devastation, Brahma went to sleep without worry for some time, following the desire of the Lord to have pastimes. So he took basically an bath. What would it be? A late morning nap, right?
After breakfast.
Yeah. After so much sitting there. Then. Thus, the words Brahma's night are taken in a secondary sense. This is the explanation of the Sandarbha, following Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Moreover, it is said, it is mentioned in the Matsya Purana that there was a pralaya, during his period, because of curse of a sage upon Swayambhuva. It is mentioned in the Vishnu Dharmotra that by the will of the Lord there was a sudden deluge during the reign of Chakshusha Manu. Lagu Bhagavatam Rita.
This passage also explained in different scriptures.
Yes.
Not only Vedic. What would be the reason?
It's a serious pastime.
Among all the pastimes, that one day...
No, there's more. It's just we never hear about them. Like that. Sahutamaras was telling me once that there was one, I think it's an archaeologist. Is it an archaeologist or anthropologist or one of those kind of Wallace? So he, in doing some work, noted that there was some connection, it means there were some similarities in these histories of one culture and another. So then he started to study all these different cultures, you know, all the ancient cultures. Basically, you could say pre-Christian culture, because depending on when Christianity came to that place, then up to that point that culture would have been intact, but after that then it seems to disintegrate. That seems to be their speciality. Right, the removal of culture. That's why Bhagavatam says it's by cultural revolution that you'll... So the culture's been removed, so it's, you know, not able to follow properly. Then you remove it, then you put it back. Like, there's the culture, they're not following properly, then Buddha then takes it away, then it comes back again. Right? That's the method. So then pre-Christianity, notice that basically as far as like the concepts of creation and demigods and all these different things, amongst all the cultures there was kind of a general kind of thing, that they all had those kind of concepts. So we see is that all the cultures before Christianity basically have very similar stories. So this, you know, and so this is one of the main ones. I think it's, I'm not sure where it is. I've seen a painting or something, I think it was in, I can't remember, Indonesia or something like that. They also have, you know, Matsya and the boat, and Satyavrata, and just sages. So it's not full of the animals like that. So we see, you know, some of the more contemporary renditions, you see more of the animals and less of the sages.
And no Matsya.
Yeah, no Matsya. Yeah.
And he didn't have to make the boat either.
Yeah, the other one he had to make the boat. Here he's provided with the boat. You know. But here he only had 7 days. I'm not sure how much
notice
Noah had. Does it say how many days he had?
But he also got a notice.
He got notice, yes. He just didn't get the boat. You had to make your own boat.
It's all because of the Eden and the apple, I guess.
I see. Okay, yeah. Yes, because the Vedic knowledge had been stolen.
They have to work.
Hmm?
They have to work, so he has to work.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. One should accept that a devastation did take place, otherwise there would have been no creation of population by Daksha after that time. His previous body had been destroyed, but he, the same Daksha, inspired by the supreme will, created all the desired living entities in the Chakshusha Manvantara. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-49. Okay, so the Acharyas, that's the meaning of the six Goswamis, Nana, Shastra, Vichara, Naika, Nipano, that they're studying, they see these things. We hear them after their explanation, we still don't understand them. It's like that verse, you know, some hear of them as amazing, some see them as amazing, and some can't even understand after even hearing about it. Right? So, yes. This is not contrary to the four types of devastation, footnote 17. The four types of destruction are nitya, constant change, naimittika, destruction at end of Brahma's day, prakritika, destruction at end of Brahma's lifetime, and atyantika, destruction of ahankara. These are described in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4. 12.4, there's no number after the 4. Oh well, but in 12th canto, 4th chapter. We got,
The whole chapter.
Oh, the whole chapter is describing this. Ah, okay. Okay. So nitya, constant, means constantly everything's being destroyed. Just as things are created, destroyed, it's just going on. Naimittika, end of Brahma's day. Then that's the next main one. So if there's smaller ones in between that and that, they're all connected with that one. Then destruction, end of Brahma's life, so that means the universe is finished. But now, again, the living entity will come back, just like at the end of the day, he'll come back, or at the end of in the nitya, one has a body, it's destroyed, the next body, it's destroyed, so all these are going on. But when one gives up through devotional service the material identity, then you get atyantika, destruction of ahankara. Then there's the removal of the false identity, I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's then the final destruction. That's the one that we're actually looking for. It's always interesting that students are focused on, you know, the application of intelligence, but that's most likely because without it, then they would they would just be stupid. Right, so wherever someone's weakness is, that's where then so because they would just be idiots, so therefore then the duty is to study. This is not contrary to the four types of devastation, since this is a secondary devastation within the day of Brahma. Right, so it's just not—it's not the main one at the end of the day. It's secondary ones within it, and as Rupa Goswami points out, they can be any of these times: at the end of a Manvantar, at the end of a cycle of the four yugas, like this. So then, this was done like this, but it was presented so it was like the end of the day. Yes.
The instructions at the end of the Manvantara, they're also considered a secondary
one? Yeah, they would be secondary of the main one, which is the impressive. Need to put up the, you know, like on the highways?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, the soundproof barriers. The lifting of the earth and killing of Hiranyaksha by Varaha took place after the devastation during Chakshusha Manvantara. Since it was impossible for Hiranyaksha to be born at the beginning of Swayambhuva Manvantara when the earth was first lifted by Varaha. Daksha was the son of the Prajetas in the lineage of Uttanapada. Daksha's daughter was Diti. Hiranyaksha was the son of Diti. At the beginning of the first kalpa of Brahma, Swayambhuva had produced no sons. Thus the Prajetas, Daksha, Diti, and Hiranyaksha could not have existed then. The truth has been discerned in this way. Thus, Maitreya, on being asked by Vidura, narrated the activities of both appearances of Varaha in one story, Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Right, so, just to make the distinction in times, because then you have one and then another, but the two, because they go together, you put them all together. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say, you start off describing someone's activities, and he does so many wonderful activities. So you might start off in the morning, he gets up and does all the things he does. Then he goes out and he starts performing whatever activity, and then from that activity you just go to the next one. Then one might ask, does that all happen in one day? No, that happened over many days. But otherwise you want to hear about him getting up and brushing his teeth and the comb and the hair and the whole thing again? No, you know, so like that. Okay. Thus Sukadeva had merged the two stories of Matsya into one without distinguishing the two different appearances. However, the first appearance was to say the Vedas, and his other appearance within the hand of Satyavrata was during Chakshusha Manvantara. Sutta also lists the Chakshusha Matsya in his narration of the avatars. Right, so that would have been right in the third chapter in the first canto.
Maharaj, does Matsya always appear to save the Vedas for each canto?
That, I'm not sure, but it just shows that there were two stories here, so if it's happening every day, but he was just taking that first one and then this one. Like that. You know, so whether, because the point is it can be done like this, it can be done however the Lord likes.
So it's always kind of kept for the next day.
Yes, but how that will be done, then that's up to the Lord. So this is, he did it like this time, so whether he continues with that next time, or the other times, and it doesn't matter whether he does it this way or not. The point is that in the morning when Brahma wakes up, then everything will be there for the creation to be done. There won't be any lack.
But he's not creating the Vedas.
No, but the Vedas will always be there, but whether it's in this way. You know what I'm saying? In other words, one has to be able, one should be comfortable with catching onto the primary aspect that connects everything rather than the secondary. Because otherwise, then we may be unnecessarily, unnaturally trying to use a particular secondary manifestation and apply it for all situations, which will never work. But the primary, because there's the connection that the Lord is the ingredient cause, means He is the one that provides everything like that, that will be there. Here He's done it like this. Does that make sense? But if we get attached to, okay, this is the secondary, it answers my secondary questions, so therefore I will use this for everything on the secondary, then we may run into problems, because it might fit, it might not fit. Right? Because just like here, is partway, you know, halfway through the day, then Brahma thinks it's night and goes to sleep. So then the question, does he do that every month? You know, no. You know, so that's the whole thing, is we have to catch the primary is where our intelligence connects everything together, because if we use the secondary only, then we'll always be bewildered. But if we use the primary, and then it's backed up with various manifestations of the secondary, that will work better for us in all situations, you know, but especially in these. Is that?
Yeah.
Yes.
So here we've heard about the demon Hayagriva, and then we also know there's the Lord's incarnation Hayagriva. What do we know about Lord Hayagriva?
He has a horse head and he saves potatoes.
Okay. So I got it all. I didn't know if there was more.
No, I mean, that means there might be explained more somewhere else. I think we come up in this canto, isn't it?
About Hayagriva?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sure there's different things, but because he that's what he did. You know. So I think that one is my motto in Kaito. So he does different things, like Hayagriva, he gives the Vedas. There's also the swan incarnation does that. So, you know, it's like he has fun. Like that. It means you have what, 1/14 of 500,000. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's how many days of Brahma there'll be. So, you know, you got to keep yourself busy. And the Manvantara avatars, there's 500,000 of them. So, you know, there's always going to be variation.
Do we know if there's a connection, like the demon Hayagriva, did he take that form imitating?
I'm not sure. Most likely he just had a horse head.
Stole it.
So, you know, I mean, the Kanaras have horse heads.
Sure,
so
sure.
It's not, you know.
Fairly common.
Yeah, it's not an uncommon thing. That's like they say, you know, like I say, mud men walking down the street. That's a common affair. Just depends where you are in the universe, whether you
bump into them.
Yes. That's yes.
The stealing of the Vedas by a demon. I mean, obviously they're not walking out with a set of books. What's that? Is it a problem with it stops, takes away Lord Brahma's understanding?
That's just something. These demons we see as they don't necessarily are logical. You know, those following in the it's not necessarily just like Vrikasura. Why have the ability whoever's head you touch and cracks in 10,000 pieces or whatever it is? That what's the whole point? You know? And then okay, so he touches Lord Shiva and then he gets Parvati, so that means he can never touch her head, then you know, how does that work? You know? That means he can never comb his hair. You know, I mean, just what, you know, what if he gets a you know, a fly buzzing in his face, and he tries to get the fly, and he slaps himself, and his head cracks. I mean, it's just, what's the logic there? So the same way is just somehow, in other words, it is stealable, therefore it's stolen, right? You know, why do it? Because it can be done, you know. So it's not that they necessarily need it. You know, it's just like the guy's walking down the street and then sees something that's just sitting there. He was not thinking about that. He doesn't need it. But because it can be stolen, he might pick it up and walk off with it. So.
We also know that the demons, they do follow, at least some of them, the Vanashram.
Yes.
Does that mean that they know some aspects of the Vedas?
Yes, yes, of course. They're educated, they're sophisticated. That's why I said Daityas are generally sophisticated. Dhanavas tend to be unsophisticated. So, you know, so
that's what I'm trying to understand. If they already have the Vedas, the significance of stealing the Vedas.
Then you have them, no one else has them.
So no one else has access to it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just like, okay, you have a Ferrari and you could steal the mold that they make Ferraris with.
Okay.
Yeah, you have the only Ferrari. Yeah, it's just something that materialists, you know, get around to at some point, because after doing everything proper and after doing everything bad, then you just do everything weird, you know. It's like,
so that's why it involves the Brahma, the repository of Vedic knowledge.
Yes, and he happens to be powerful enough to be able to go there. I mean, so it's like, you know, there was the local, you know, kid out on the street may not be able to do that, but you know, he's able to go there and do that. So.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.